Assembly Hall.
We're lying.
Somebody else is.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Jim.
Dr. Jackson, right. Good afternoon. I guess we're here for the Universal Council meeting on the afternoon of Friday, March 9th. I'd like to call the meeting to order and start, as we start all meetings, with a question as to whether anybody has any changes to the minutes, draft minutes from the last meeting.
A small change. I think John's name was misspelled in paragraph 3.
Oh, it was. The fallen.
The fallen Fallon.
I'm sorry, paragraph 3?
Is that the message that was being
second line? That's actually the fallen Balachandran.
Actually, it was corrected, but not on this version.
Okay.
That's a good answer. I use that on conference calls all the time. When we're doing a markup call, I'm like, oh, we already caught that. Sorry.
I should have Charles chastising me for not taking roll call. Who's on the phone?
Jim Jackson.
Oh, Dr. Jackson, good afternoon.
Hi, Jim.
Is Jim Clancy on?
Jim, I spoke to him this morning, but I don't. He wasn't sure he was going to
get. I thought I already.
Jim Clancy's here. Yep.
Okay. Anyone else? Members of the press? No. Okay. Thank you. Any other changes to the minutes? Can I get a motion to adopt the minutes as revised?
As revised.
As fallen. Yes. Yes.
And I'll second.
Thank you.
You did it.
All in favor?
Aye, aye, aye. Aye.
Great, thank you. Next up is our esteemed president, Mr. Phillip, and a report.
I'm looking around for the esteemed part. I'm not sure.
Take the E off. The esteemed
president. Rather than esteemed. Huh?
I thought it was the extinguished president. We'll go quickly because there's a lot of things that have happened since the last meeting. Just to update you on NY SUNY 2020, because I know that's been on the agenda for a long time. We have submitted a new iteration of our proposal to the governor's office. They will be reviewing. It will probably be sometime after April 1st, which is the budget deadline. So clearly they have a full plate at this point. We have, however, been active in our conversations with both SUNY and the governor's office, and we are nearing the end, which is important.
And was the revision based on feedback you got from them?
Absolutely. We've gotten a lot of back and forth. Frankly, our initial proposal was biomedical in its approach, and both Buffalo and Stony Brook were also biomedical. So we've gone back to the drawing board because first in, but we've come up with and the focus of the theme is going to be climate, so it's a little different than anything you've seen, but it could change
like sustainability, those types of things.
Yeah, and our atmosphere science and research and some of the other work that we do is and of course it will be one of a number of themes, but it'll be the focal theme if it's accepted on that way. So it
I forgot, was that a competition where all four university centers were submitting and only how many were going to be approved?
All four will be approved. Yeah, all four will be approved. It's just a matter of whether or not we are going to come up with a proposal that's that you can come in. So in any event, we're very optimistic that this will be dealt with shortly after the completion of the budget. As far as the budget is concerned, the state-operated colleges appear to be in good shape. The governor's proposal does not call for any reductions. One of the really good parts of what had occurred as a result of some of this NY SUNY 2020 legislation was an assurance of maintenance of effort, which meant that we aren't going to get increases, but we aren't going to get decreases, and that's critical. At least we've bottomed out. We're going to be able to use the full value of the tuition increase, which is also very important. We're in the process of trying to regrow the enterprise in an intelligent way. SUNY President's Meeting occurred on February 6th. There is a there's actually an NY SUNY 2020 amendment that will one guarantee that we get the full value. At least we're trying to get the full value of the academic excellence fee, because we're a year into it. So rather than get 4 years, that we actually get the full value, which is 5 years going forward. No retroactive payments, but going forward, at least get the full value of the 5 years. There is a proposal that the governor has to expand the capital component of NY SUNY 2020 to a competition for the other state facilities, not the four university centers which have gotten it, but they want to expand it to three other SUNYs. I believe it's $20 million apiece. Is that what it is, Vince?
Yes.
$20 million apiece. Again, stressing the whole idea of partnerships. You know, coming up with a collaborative effort with the community or partners, and including partnerships among the SUNY campuses, which is something that they're trying to encourage. Another part of that proposal is credit language. One of the dilemmas that we have right now, for example, we are doing things that will make those people who are who would have limited access to the university, and that this tuition, this current tuition increase, would provide for an undue hardship. So, for example, the $300 tuition increase, as it exceeds the $5,000 tax, the TAP limit. If you're at 100% TAP assistance, we'll actually give you aid for the full 100% of the increase. So we'll make them whole. The dilemma is not that side; it's the side where you have minimal TAP increases, and we're talking about $15 grants. Yeah, the $15 grants are an administrative nightmare to address. So we're trying to issue you know, some kind of credit setup, so we don't have to start issuing $15 checks. So that's something that's being worked on. The chancellor also went through her top priorities. One is shared services. You've read a great deal about that. I think she wants, her goal is to shift 5% of the budget, the operating budgets, from administration to academics to instruction, which is frankly certainly a worthwhile goal. 2013 in planning, 2014 in terms of an implementation.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, I think my opinion is where they're going to be able to get the most bang for their buck is IT. IT is, you know, they're all over the map. 64
You get 64 different systems pretty much, don't you?
Well, it's not 64, but it's certainly, they're all over the map, and I think there are real opportunities there to save money. That's where you're going to get. You know, procurement is, in my opinion, a limited opportunity, because pretty much the procurement processes are in place right now that maximize savings. Some of the procurement stuff actually flies in the face of other initiatives. For example, we have a buy local initiative here, which is part of our sustainability initiative. In other words, buy local produce, et cetera. Well, that may not fly with a big state procurement initiative, where we may be buying Brazilian stuff or whatever. So that's kind of contradictory.
Buffalo potatoes.
Right? Yeah, whatever. And the other thing would be, you know, we have a very a big emphasis in New York State and an increasing emphasis on minority and women business enterprises.
Right.
Some of this procurement stuff actually flies in the face of that.
Right.
So I think that's more problematic, but I do think IT is a real opportunity. I think shared services in other areas, you know, might generate some, you know, return, but I don't know that it'll generate a great deal of money one way or the other. I think, frankly, you know, productivity is always some way that you're going to be able to get, you know, more bang for your buck. I mean, that's I think that there's going to be in her plan a far greater emphasis on entrepreneurial behavior and entrepreneurial conduct. She wants to measure that. She wants to measure how many entrepreneurs we train, how much external research is attracted, you know, how many businesses we grow, that sort of thing. Because, you know, that's the theme, that that the State University of New York is the economic engine for the state, and that this is the way in which we grow not only big business but small businesses.
Is she she's not talking at all publicly about campus consolidations or anything like that, right?
Well, you saw what happened in,
yes,
in Potsdam and Canton.
Question.
And, and frankly, right now, the Cobleskill campus is and the
I know. I'm neighbors with both of those campuses.
Yeah.
So
and that's actually working.
I think it's working pretty well.
Pretty well.
Although, if you talk to the people who were there, they're not, you know, the staff's not that happy because they got to do a lot of traveling and stuff. But it seems to me, this is just me talking.
Yeah.
I think that's where the future real savings is. And, you know, until somebody's willing to bite the bullet on that, I think you're going to have trouble exacting real savings.
Well, see, I agree with you, and I think biting the bullet goes beyond that. There, I don't know that we need 64 campuses.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, forget 64 administrations.
No, no. Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. You consolidate administration so that you may have a single entity with more than one campus.
Right.
Because so you use some of the facilities, but you don't necessarily need 64 entities.
Yeah. Well, this morning I just read the.
I'm on tape, right?
Yeah, you are. This morning I read the.
I'm not running for office.
Canton and Potsdam, both councils, incidentally, speaking of that,
yeah.
have publicly stated that they're recruiting for a combined CFO.
Yeah.
And both councils have come out saying that they don't think it'll work and that they need individual CFOs.
Well, no surprise. I mean, we spent
both,
a weekend with
both
those
campuses.
Guys. Pierre and I did, and I almost got tarred and feathered on the way out.
You have to even look at not just at the administrative level, but isn't there a way for, I don't know, if somebody at Cobleskill wants to take some arcane course that's only offered at a university that somehow they can participate online in, you know, your favorite Scandinavian studies at Binghamton. And not have, but, you know, so that you can kind of share resources academically as well.
Yeah, and I think that's the future. I think we're looking at distance learning. We're looking at non-traditional approaches to delivering the product that we have. I think that's the only way we're going to go. We've talked about the demographics going forward.
Sure.
And that tells you what you have to do.
Particularly for smaller, you know.
Yeah. Problem is that I'm sure in your conversations today, for example,
yes.
You could see there are going to be people that are resistant to any change whatsoever.
Right.
So I know that comes as a shock to some of you, but resistance to change is not necessarily. And the other thing that an emphasis that the chancellor has is apparently I don't know the source of the measurement, but that SUNY, at least the statutory or the state campuses, spend about $70 million a year in remediation, preparing students to be able to go to college. She wants to work on that number and bring it down. It's an interesting number because I believe the community colleges have already published a number which is significantly higher. So I guess if you add the two together, it's a huge number, like $150 or $60 million. Of remediation efforts, and
that sounds even low. I mean, it sounds low to me.
Yeah. Well, I think what it tells you is that maybe, you know, there are lots of work that needs to be done, not only in K through 12, but then also in the community college.
Right.
And you know, the idea of free flow, you know, is a good idea, but you got to make sure that people are able to compete in an environment. You know, not every student that graduates from community college can come to the University at Albany.
Right.
Yeah. A lot of them can, but not everyone can. And there needs to be this whole idea of having open articulation agreements has been floated for a long time, and this idea of remediation, but a lot of money is being spent. Somehow, I don't know how you fix the pipeline, but you got to fix the pipeline somewhere.
The steering committee, shared services, has its first meeting next week or week after.
You on that?
I'm on that as by virtue of ACT, and mm-hmm. Provost Phillips is also on it. And there's 19
good.
University of Albany will be well represented.
Her final plan is this idea of the pipeline and the free flow, and also measuring completion rates. So, and that's important. You know, it's more than graduation rates; it's completion rates. It's you know how you get there, how long it takes you to get there, what's the course of action that gets you there. And to be honest with you, not everybody needs to go to a 4-year school. You know, not everybody. Frankly, right now the emphasis is on community colleges and the workforce training that they create. And there's lots of jobs, technical jobs for community college graduates, especially in this area with global foundries and the like. Local news, we have unveiled our plan for our new athletic facilities. Generally well received in the community, not overwhelmingly well received in on campus, but it is capital. It's $24 million. It's the estimated completion cost. $6 million will come from private donations. We are a pace in terms of the private donations. We think that the facilities that we construct are going to be modest but expandable. There'll be a football, soccer, any number of other, depending on how much money we get from other sports, facility that will accommodate 8,000, and it will be modular in nature so that every penny that's spent on this single wall facility will be money that will be used for the ultimate end product, so there's no waste. It's actually been designed as a bigger facility and it's being created in a modular way. Hopefully our programs will be as successful as they can be and that we'll actually have need to expand the facilities. But if we don't, we're going to have a very nice facility that actually accommodates what we currently are able to use. Our track facilities will be repaired. Our current track is not... NCAA regulation. As a matter of fact, in spite of the fact that we have one of the most successful track and field programs in the country, none of our students have ever seen a home meet. There are 200 regulation tracks in high schools, but the university doesn't have one. So that will be.
It was never regulation?
It was missing a lane.
It's missing a lane, and it's also the inside lane is shorter than the other, so we
that's
could
the
cheat.
Lane I run on.
We could cheat.
Don't tell anybody.
I was wondering why I went in college. I had that 4-minute mile. Yeah.
It was a 4-minute, 3/4 of a mile.
What's the timetable for that?
We're hoping to have a football game, the last home football game of this coming year.
Okay.
On the football field, we're hoping.
What's the date of that?
At the very, I don't know. At the very worst, it'll be the first football game of next year, of the 13 year. But if
we had to play it next spring for that, the following
spring. But
purple and gold game.
Another component of that, of course, is a turf facility that will be over by the tennis courts on Dutch Quad. That will be not part of the athletic department and not part of the athletic program. It will be student life. It'll be for intramural and club sports, and it'll be purely for student use, not for intercollegiate student use. So that's also a sorely needed facility for our students. The other 17,500 students that don't participate in intercollegiate athletics. So that's an important component of that.
Are the Giants coming
next? Giants are coming. The Giants are coming. I was told by John Mara that they're coming. We've had confirmations from any number of politicians, whether they're based on fact or just based on their desire to get some publicity. I don't know, but the media has confirmed, the mayor has confirmed, Senator Schumer has confirmed. So I guess it's true.
Senator Schumer said it's got to be
that's
true.
That's it, exactly.
Artie at the Cross the Street Pub says they're coming back.
So let me know. Artie says they're coming back, too. So we're in good shape. We know that Coach Coughlin wants to come back. I was very grateful to know that he was going to continue as coach because, frankly, I think if he left, it would have been problematic. Because I know the general manager is not crazy about coming to Albany.
Oh, really?
So how do we get rid of him, then?
Well, after he won the Super Bowl. We're off to a bad start because he got the Super Bowl.
The coach is pretty important, right? Too, though.
Now, we do have a concern, and the concern is going to be how we stage our construction with the Giant Camp. And that's a significant concern because, frankly, although we have a plan, they have to accept that plan. It does require that the players walk a little further. Uh-oh. I know, it's a terrible thing. But
it's part of their training.
Yeah, well, You don't even want to know what we went through with that with cafeteria stuff at one point. If you recall, they had to walk a little further because we changed their cafeteria and they weren't happy with that. Because they don't mind practicing, but they don't want to walk to get the practice, I guess. But in any event, that's going to be a problem. I don't know. Steve may know what happened with the meeting. Did they go down to...
Not yet.
That's next week or whatever. Okay, I know there's a meeting scheduled with our people and the Giants people to talk about... You know, and they are concerned. They're concerned about the construction, but we're mindful of the impact. I'm concerned primarily because they won... I'm happy they won the Super Bowl, but we know that the last time they won the Super Bowl, we had record crowds here for the community. I'm worried about record crowds in an environment where we've got construction going on. So I'm more concerned. I don't care about the walk, but I'm more concerned about dealing with the public at large that comes to make sure that we provide a safe environment. So, but we're working hard on that. Along the lines of football, as long as we're talking about that, on February 2nd, the city of Albany declared it the Bob Ford Day. Bob Ford is our football coach for the last 42 years, the only football coach the university has ever had. He was thrilled. Lee, you would agree. He was thrilled. His comment to his wife was, when he told her about Bob Ford Day, he said, "In your wildest dreams, did you ever think that they would have, you know, a day for me, Bob Ford?" And she said that, "You're not in my wildest dreams." Which I thought was a great line.
That's spectacular.
Last week we had the Marvin and Company and our School of Business announce the business climate survey results here on campus. This local economy is ranked for the second time in 17 years as one of the top local economies in the country. Forbes magazine said this was the fourth best area for job creation and the like. So, and almost all of that is really a function of the success of our nano facilities and our nano program. So, that's important. There's a website if you want to learn more about that. The Albany Day downtown was a terrific success. Actually, I think the best we've ever had, primarily because it started out with 1,200, you know, K through 12 students coursing through the area there. You want to talk about generating some excitement and noise? We generated a lot of noise and excitement. Those little kids had a great time. We had 35 student performances. Our kids are really good. They are really good. The performances I thought were terrific. Trey, you were down there and. Great advocacy visits. It was actually a pleasant environment because most of our advocacy visits were to say thank you, not to ask for something. So you could see a lot of blank looks on the legislators' face when they said, you're not asking for anything? No, we're thanking you for your support. And so that went very well. The Purple Growl was a complete sellout as far as both the dinner and the basketball game. The REDC process has been reinstated. The results of the first REDC, and I continue to be on that board, but I will see what happens once I leave. But the first REDC, we submitted three proposals and got funded for all three, which is very good. We were much more modest. One of the proposals that is that we had funded was a research alliance with the University, Albany Medical College, and RPI, and other partners that are going to be brought in. That's in the works. Jim and Vince are working on that along with others, and there's some real possibilities there of some collaborations that will work really well. Our SEED program had its first anniversary. Our SEED program is a loan program that's run by our Small Business Development Center, the Empire State Development, and CEFQ Credit Union. We've given out $385,000 worth of loans, created 52 jobs, which seems modest, but these are not loans that are traditionally underwritten. These are loans that are based on the quality of a business plan and the personal integrity and reputation of the person who's asking you to borrow the money. It's not a situation where, you know, in other words, to borrow money, if you're a businessman, you got to have money. You know, all you have to have is a good name. and a good business plan and a good idea. Our small business people and our school of business people have been intimately involved with helping these people to develop these businesses. And again, this is a program that is sort of groundbreaking. We have a $2.5 million commitment for SEFCU for the loans that will grow as this program grows, and it's very exciting. I'll just take questions. Yes?
Jim, did you have a question?
I will mention that Abner has asked a question about the management study and the alternatives to Fountain Day. And before I... the Fountain Day alternatives, as you all know, last year around this time, maybe a week later, somehow March 17th rings a bell. I'm trying to figure out how I remember the date.
I know, but it's a vacation day.
Yeah, it's just something there that rings a bell. We stopped Fountain Day, much to the chagrin of many of our students. This year, of course, it was anticipated we wouldn't have Fountain Day because of that we were going to basically start construction of our fountain renovations as well as the water tower. Let me digress for a minute. What we're doing in the fountain area is not purely aesthetic. The water tower, that tower that sits there, is the source of all water pressure on campus, including our fire safety stuff. So that has been in place for 47 years, and it is in dire need of rehabilitation. So we actually have to take that down as part of this process.
We're actually taking the tower down.
Is
it down already?
No, we're not
down.
Not down. Oh. Taking it down, meaning
offline.
So offline.
I keep saying that. The same reaction.
Well, I did the same thing. I mentioned Mohawk Tower.
Sorry to speak up like that, but I
mentioned Mohawk Tower. I said we have to take it down, and they said you're going to take down a tower. Take it offline. But so that's a fire safety thing that has to be done. But if you've looked at the plan, the resulting aesthetic changes that are going to be made for the fountain in there are spectacular.
Yeah.
They're going to be beautiful. It will be a gorgeous amenity down there. So be patient. It will look a lot better. We are doing Park Fest, which is going to be an expanded Park Fest on the same day. I'm looking at Trey because I don't know the details.
Park Fest is now, we were approved a couple weeks ago to do our normal spring concert out on a column, well, not concert, what's in the...
Right where the fountains are.
We do a commencement.
On the plaza?
Yeah.
Plaza.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So that'll be a but it, there won't be a water event. There won't be a water event. And Steve, why don't you...
For 2 years, basically.
For 2 years,
it's a long project.
Yeah. And I'll be out of town.
No water?
Steve, why don't you mention the Matrix, yeah, they study.
Yeah, the Matrix study, that's the management firm that we use to do that study, is in what I would suggest is final draft form. We've had a chance to clean up, the writing. They omitted a couple things we wanted in there, so I got it to George last week in final draft form. He's going to take a look at it to see if there are any omissions that he wants covered. When we get it back, and I think George plans on looking at it next week when he's away. When we get it back, make any changes that need to be made. None of his direct reports have seen it yet, so I suggest to George that probably the next best step before we come to a meeting like this and make it public is for him to meet with each of his direct reports to show them the final draft and say, you know, are there any manifest errors in here that need to be corrected? Then we'll go to final and then make it public. Come back to you folks and do the other things we need to do. Go to the Senate with it and generally begin to make it public.
The hope is this will be a tool for the new president as well.
Sure. We email it to us then? Is that how we'll get it?
It's a big document.
Uh-huh. Or mail it to us.
Or mail it, yeah, probably.
Yeah, because then we don't have another meeting till
May.
June, I assume.
May.
So, yeah.
Now, just, I did not orchestrate this. Steve was the focal point. He's also a lame duck, so I figured he was not someone who is going to be, now lame duck, I'm not pushing to see.
Taking you down.
I'm used to this.
But yeah, I'm taking you down. It's a, the so it's, this is not something that was orchestrated by me. I was not intimately involved with. Actually, I met with them twice.
No, just once to, you know, basically explain.
Once in with you when you, that's it. I mean, that's my full involvement. There's no interference on the part. And of course, as I mentioned to you earlier, the one of the criticisms of the process was, why did we pay an outsider to do this? Of course, if I had had it done inside, it would have had no credibility, and the criticism would have been, a big deal. You know, you're it's self-serving in terms of the, so you can't win anyway on that stuff. But in any event, that'll be a useful tool for the new president, I hope, to implement.
Absolutely.
Okay. Any other questions?
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Trey?
Just a couple of quick updates. We did just, our student association did just recently completes our general elections for next year. However, our president and vice president, since we had so many candidates, are going into a runoff, so we will have a runoff election after spring break, so we will know then who our new presidents and vice president will be. We do have our new university council representative who was supposed to show up today, but he, I think he was taking a little sick today. So we're going to leave it at that. We're going to leave it at that. But, yeah, but
the buses are out front.
Yeah.
The buses are out front.
It's like the last student to leave, right?
Yeah, I'll probably be home for a few days before I have to come back and actually do some work. But yeah, so we just finished that. We are also in the process of crafting our budget for next year. So that process is going fairly well, unfortunately, because last year we did not get the complete student activity fee increase that we had requested. And we had over budgeted somewhat because we had expected more money than we actually brought in. So we've unfortunately had to cut back our budget a little bit this year so that we can equalize for next year. However, we did get approved as of sometime earlier this week for the remainder of that student activity fee, so that'll be $90 a semester for every student starting next year. So hopefully we'll be able to equalize things out and get ourselves back to a little bit more of a state of financial solvency. Let's see, we also just redid our student government constitution. We held a constitutional convention that was redone and passed also during our election by referendum. So that passed. Just a couple of updates in the area of gender sexuality concerns. Our director has been working very hard on a number of programs.
Did you say gender?
Gender sexuality concerns. So they work a lot with the Gender and Sexuality Resource Center on campus. That's run out of the Multicultural Student Success Office. So they have they're working on a Take Back the Night, which is an event that'll be downtown this year on April 26th, I believe. The Lavender graduation also will be May 18th at 1, I think that's the time. She's also working on getting together a workshop to show a movie called The Jihad for Love, which is basically a movie that deals with religion and the LGBT community and how the two work together and don't always coincide with each other. So she's working on a workshop with that with the Gender Sexuality Resource Center. She's also working on a couple other lectures, trying to promote the LGBT community on campus and raising awareness and other things like that, especially now with the gender neutral housing experiment that's going on beginning next semester. So
gender neutral housing is
thank you.
Yeah. I figured that would be in effect, on the face of it, it's something that if you're a parent, you'd say what?
What? Yeah.
But it's primarily designed to provide for safe and not hostile housing for, in particular, our transgendered students, and we have a number of them.
Yes. I believe now if the students are transgendered and they identify as transgendered,
yes,
they do make special circumstances for them. However, the problem with that is in order to get those special circumstances, you have to identify as transgendered first. So this allows them to not have to do that. So it's basically a measure to, you know, kind of help them.
So all housing going forward will be gender neutral?
Yeah, but it will be a tightly controlled process. It's opt-in, and I've had extensive conversations about this because being an old person that needed to be educated on the concept of just general neutral housing. If I had a daughter, there was no way she'd live with a bunch of guys. I'll tell you that right now. But I mean, it's not as open as that you think of that. It's basically it's opt-in. It's a very careful process. And it is designed primarily to protect vulnerable students on campus.
And it's not an uncommon thing.
It's a very common.
Schools that have done similar things. I'm in the area of academic affairs. Our academic affairs director has been working on getting together an outstanding faculty award, something that we've been trying to do just as a way for us as the students to recognize faculty members that we find to be outstanding or have made an impact on our students' lives. So we are working on that, and I believe Rebecca, our academic affairs director, is going to try to bring it up at the spring faculty meeting whenever that is. So we're getting together a committee for that, so we can get that, we can roll that out to the faculty members. It's just something for us to kind of say thank you to our faculty members like Andy here. On the community outreach front, we've got a ton of things going on in terms of community outreach. We've had our student-to-student initiative. We've been working with the president's office, with Miriam Trematozzi, and that has got off to a great start. Basically, student-to-student initiative is where some of our students and some of our student groups are basically going into the high schools and working with the students in the high schools. We have a number of our student groups who've been going out there. They do workshops with them, and some of them do tutoring and other things like that. So it's basically just a way for us as students to kind of be reaching out to the community, reaching and catching those high school students. So that'll be going on from now through till April 22nd. So this is sort of our pilot year to see how it goes, and if it works, we'll probably be, in future years, get more groups involved, get more students involved, and try to grow the program a little bit. But that'll be going this year through April 22nd. The next event, I believe, was actually this past weekend. It was the third, where a bunch of our student leaders got together with students from the local high school, and our math and actuarial club actually was tutoring students in math and a bunch of things. So that happened this weekend. I'm trying to think what else we got going on in the community. We also now have a consistent student representative in the Pine Hills Neighborhood Association Board. So that's been very advantageous for us, making sure that they know that the students actually care about the community, and we're not just all here to wreck the place up. So we are trying to get a couple of community cleanups going before the end of the semester. At least one before the end of the year, if not two, if possible. So we are working on those with the Pine Hills Neighborhood Association. We also have a CANTAB drive going on. Take a look. So that's just another fundraiser that's going on. So basically, where you basically collect the cans, the tabs of the soda cans, and it'll contribute to the Ronald McDonald House. So for every pound of tabs that we receive, the money goes for upkeep to the Ronald McDonald House, which is a charity. So we're doing that. We also have an Autism Speaks Walk, which will be April 1st, tentatively from 12 to 4 on the podium. So we do have a group on campus that's similar to our Students Involvement Against Cancer. We have a group on campus who's trying to raise awareness about autism and that kind of stuff. So we are going to be having an Autism Speaks Walk on campus. We also will be having an Out of the Darkness Walk for Suicide Prevention, which we did last year, which was extremely successful. We'll be doing that again as well.
Great.
I don't think we'll be on the podium again this year, but they haven't quite figured out where they will be because I guess it went so well last year. They're looking to expand somewhat the organization that runs the charity that goes through. So we will be doing that also. We also have Relay for Life. I believe it's the weekend of April 14th. So that's Students Involvement Against Cancer. It's very, very active in doing that. I know they just had a TCBY fundraiser last Wednesday. So if you went to TCBY and got ice cream that day, part of the proceeds went to the American Cancer Society. So that was good. And SA is trying to help them in any way we possibly can. and kind of get a better essay presence than we've had in some previous years. It's probably not the best thing for our student representatives to have a low turnout at one of the biggest community events on campus during the year. So we are working with that. We're trying to help them get Chicken Joe's on campus for some catering for Relay for Life. So if anyone likes Chicken Joe's, they may be here for Relay for Life. They SAC met with Chartwells, and Chartwells approved it and said it'd be, kind of be a good way for us to kind of, help, get the community, business more involved. Let's see what else we got. Cleanups. And then sometime in April, I believe the end of April, we'll be having our Purple and Gold Awards, which are our awards for our different student groups and organizations, which is something that was started 2 years ago under former SA President Josh Sussman. So we'll be working on that. It's basically where we recognize different student groups or outstanding student leaders or like up-and-coming student leaders, who are like juniors and sophomores who have really shown exemplary work in in student leadership, just another way to recognize our students and our student groups on campus. So that'll be going on.
And you do your leadership training leadership training as well for future student leaders as well. It's a great program
We do. Yes, the Office of Student Involvement also runs some emerging leaders program for up and coming freshmen and sophomores. So they do a lot of leadership development activities. They go to workshops. They have guest speakers. They meet with our student leaders on campus a lot. So we're very involved with that, too. So that's very good. I think the last thing that I have, we're also, our student association, our senior leadership team is also working on right now with the Office of Student Involvement and Campus Recreation and Chris Bouchard's office on developing a proposal from us to Campus Recreation. I believe our student president, Zafir, and Arthur came and talked to President Phillip earlier in the semester about some issues, I believe, they believe they had with Campus Recreation. So we are coming up with a proposal for them on ways to help us better organize, better fund, better coordinates our club sports program on campus. I think the biggest problem that we have as a student government with club sports is that a lot of our club sports, although they are just club sports, are competitive. So a lot of them travel, like our crew team or rowing is very good. They compete at almost equivalent to a varsity level. So a lot of them have coaches and others. So a lot of issues come into play that a lot of times we don't have the staff or the expertise to manage them. So we're trying to work more with Campus Recreation to kind of help us, improve that program while alleviating some of the burden from our student leadership.
What happens when they travel? Are they covered insurance?
That's part of our.
That's one of the issues. Is right now the way things are set up, because our student association is a completely separate entity from the university. We have our own insurance policies and all that kind of stuff like that. But our insurance policy is very limited.
Sure.
A few years back, we had the women's rugby team got into a serious accident on a trip, and essentially what happened was, they had got approved for funding for a trip for like they paid the tournament fees or something like that, but didn't approve for the gas where they were driving, or there was something that didn't happen that should have, in terms of internal control policies. And they went, got an accident, sued the student association for quite a bit of money, and we just settled out of it 2 years ago, maybe, for about a five-figure sum. So our insurance agent then said, no more personal traveling. So now we have to either allow them to use buses or airfare or something to that effect. So our costs for club sports have gone up.
They're using an individual vehicle at the time. This is several years ago. This is before, that was the big issue was, it wasn't university supplied transportation. It wasn't SA supplied transportation. It wasn't covered by the typical insurance coverage that you might have if you provided it, and that's an area of concern. We're working with Student Success, the SA, and we'll come up with a resolution.
That's the other piece, speaking of internal controls, is we have been working with Student Success and...
How many club sports do you have?
We have about 21 dedicated club sports, but I'm pretty sure that number has grown somewhat. And not all of them are at the same level. Like, they vary
right,
in terms of level. Like, crew is obviously one of our top tier in terms of competitiveness and funding, whereas we have groups like handball or badminton, which, you know, you give them like $200 to go, you know, hit a ball around, throw a ball around, something like that.
Shuttlecock.
So it varies. It varies. But we have been working with Steve's office and Kevin Wilcox on trying to improve SA's internal control policies and our risk management policies as well to mitigate some of those issues that we've had over the years.
Yeah.
So we are trying to improve to have some.
Let me add. I'm sorry.
Your report's always of great interest, and perhaps we could schedule a more detailed presentation on what the Student Association does as a council member. Your budget's got to be at $90 a student. Is that your revenue source? Is the fees
$1.5 million?
$1.5 million, 1.6. That's quite an operation.
Yeah, I think our budget now is probably close to 2.1 now after this next coming year. We actually got a little more this year because we have more students than we expected. So
I'd certainly be interested in finding out more on how you're doing so much. And now, is the speaker series still in the budget?
Yes, we cut one of them this year for budgetary reasons, obviously. But we're hoping that next year we will still have. We're still always banking on the one at homecoming because that's the easiest time logistically for us because it's homecoming, so everyone's here. Whether we will continue to do two, will be.
You had done one a semester, for 2 or 3 years?
We did two the first year, and we did two last year, but we only did Magic Johnson this year for financial reasons. So we'll see. As of right now, we are looking to, in addition to our regular university sponsors, we're also looking to seek some outside sponsors as well, because as it goes on, financially, it's just not sustainable for us to continue doing it year after year after year without any sort of support.
Mm-hmm.
However, I know we have spoken with Fardeen's office, and Fardeen has mentioned that, you know, like, we have, I think, proven to the community at large that, I mean, this is a completely student-run initiative that, you know, we have obviously been able to show that is something that is, you know, sustainable and that we can do, and it's something that a lot of people in the community, not only students, would like to see, you know, continue. So we are looking into, you know, more outside sponsorship as well to kind of help us with the sustainability of the event.
Two quick things. One, Trey talked a lot about student involvement in the community, and as I think you know, we've been named to the President Obama's honor roll for the first time ever, primarily because of our student involvement in the community. So that's something that is a source of great pride for this university. And along those lines, as you know, as we mentioned earlier, sort of in jest, but this is the first anniversary, or close to the first anniversary, of our Kegs and Eggs fiasco. And you should know that MSNBC is intending to do a piece, a national piece, on Kegs and Eggs, which will be basically taking some of those photographs that our kids foolishly put on the whatever the social media
YouTube
sites are, whatever, and that will actually open the wounds and open the sores. They have actually interviewed a number of kids on campus, I don't know what the results are going to be, but that's something that will probably impact us. As soon as that happens with MSNBC, I guarantee you that the local media will pick it up, and we will, it will anyway, we will be reliving the events of last year one more time. So just be prepared for that. And the last thing in terms of our students, we've just been involved with lobbying for restoration of funding for a program that we have at the university called Just for the Kids. It's a program that where we actually provide consulting services for K-12 schools What we've done is we've done research for what makes the difference between a higher performing school that's equally, that has an equal amount of money and similar demographics. So if you're school A and you get this amount of state aid and you have this amount of demographics, you know, 50% or 60%, you know, free and reduced lunch populations, etc., why do some of these programs perform better than others? We've developed a real good program. It's been in place since 2004. It's the only one of its kind. We lost funding for a variety of reasons, none of which was the fault of the program. We're in the process of getting it restored. The reason I'm bringing this up is that instrumental in our getting this program restored was the lobbying efforts of our students. So they, too, are very active politically on behalf of the university. So another reason to thank them for all of the good work that they've done.
That's state-funded?
It is state-funded. But line item, governor's line item since 2004 that we lost. Almost impossible to do. But we'll, it's on the tape. I'm not telling you why.
Oh, I also forgot one more thing. We're also, our community outreach department is very active this year, but we're also doing a fundraiser for a little girl named Jasmine, who was a member of our U Kids, you know, our university pre-kindergarten, who was recently diagnosed with brain cancer, I believe. So I believe our director of operations at SA has her children go there, so she knows the little girl. So we are also doing a fundraiser from April 14th. From 2 to 5 at the Delmar Reformed Church at 386 Delaware Ave in Delmar, New York. So we will be there with some volunteers helping, you know, to do some fundraising for this little girl as well.
Thank you.
We've killed your day, so.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
We've been busy.
I'm still processing all of that. That's impressive. I mean, the level of involvement, both in depth and breadth, is that's pretty impressive. Okay, Andy?
Okay, the faculty are way less ambitious. You know, we've passed the torch, right? In terms of Senate activity update, there's a new and improved and streamlined Gen Ed proposal that appears to be gaining support and momentum. It will reach the floor of the Senate in April, and we hope it will be passed in time to actually roll out in the fall. And so far, there have been no stumbling blocks. We're hoping this one will actually work. There were three resolutions brought by a senator from LLC to the Senate floor at the meeting on February 6th, all of which passed. And so the various councils have been charged with looking into these situations. That one was involving violations of governance procedures in the program deactivations, a resolution to institute specific consultation procedures before enacting deactivation, and a resolution to determine offerings in European languages and classical studies in accordance with the UAlbany's mission and strategic plan. So as you can see, these issues remain at the forefront of some faculty's minds, much like we heard this morning in the presidential
I'm well-versed
search.
In it now, yeah.
Yes.
Dan, what are you doing about that?
There's also been discussion of strategies for bringing the work of the Administrative Review Committee into line with the needs of the administration after President Phillip raised some significant concerns at the February Senate meeting. As an immediate result, the proposed charter amendment to create a council charged with administrative review has been withdrawn with the intention of, after discussion, reconsideration, and collaboration. Some proposal will be brought back to the Senate for consideration next year. A Senate Council also sent a letter to President Phillip requesting that he put together a task force to consider moving UAlbany toward a smoke-free campus. And in terms of general faculty concerns, the Presidential Search Committee, as you probably noted, small but vocal and concerned groups of people. It does remain a central concern on campus, sure. And their concerns seem to overlap pretty consistently with what we heard this morning. Another area of recent serious concern is the proposal as part of the master plan to move two departments in the College of Arts and Sciences down to at the downtown campus from the uptown campus, and the resulting loss and ready collaborations between those closely related programs. and with the news media having picked up on our provost status in the UMass Amherst search, the campus is, of course, buzzing with speculation about the future of the strategic plan and implementation and the future of the university in general, and concern for general fatigue and morale on campus. I'm sorry, it wasn't nearly as inspiring and uplifting as my colleague to the...
Maybe we should let you go first.
By way of explanation, the four finalists for the UMass Amherst position were published yesterday. Susan Phillips, who's the sitting provost, is one of the four finalists, as is Carlos Santiago, which was one of our previous provosts, one of the four finalists for that. It's kind of interesting that the university has actually populated many presidencies.
Does that mean we're a really good training ground?
I think it is. I think it does mean that. I think it's a it's a tough job here. It's all uphill, downhill, uphill here, downhill after. But so I think that's the one concern that they have. But clearly the. The strategic plan is a university-wide commitment, you know. And to be really honest with you, a new president is going to do with the strategic plan what he or she wants to do. But certainly, there's so much effort put into it. And I'll be honest with you: if I were the person coming in, there's no way I'd want to do it over again.
Right.
You know, it's a fresh document. It's something that. There's been a terrific crosswalk between what we want to do and what SUNY's going to do. A lot of effort's been put into it, and I greatly doubt that it will be anything but implemented. But I understand the concern.
What's the view on SUNY 2020 from a faculty
perspective? I suspect our president could answer that as effectively as any of us mere rank and file types. It's mixed, shall we say.
What it evidences is that we've done a bad job explaining it, because clearly there are a lot of people on campus that don't understand what it is. Some people view it as, they actually have characterized it as a way of pitting different elements on campus against each other, which, couldn't be further from the truth. The fact of the matter is there's no such intent, there's no such impact. There are those that are concerned that it focuses more on the hard sciences than it does on the humanities and the other areas. And frankly, the 2020 is not just a single structure. The fact of the matter is it's a part of an entire reinvestment plan that we've implemented. And for the most part, one of the largest beneficiaries of the reinvestment plan are going to be the arts and science, the College of Arts and Sciences. In terms of retooling and hiring, people view the capital part of it, don't understand the impact that's going to occur on campus. The reinvestment plan is heavily skewed towards faculty and faculty appointments, and it's not just in the hard sciences.
Dan, just one important consideration with regard to the 2020 view that question you just asked. The difference in the views is also shared at Binghamton, Stony Brook, and Buffalo, and in a large measure, that's because of the charge that the governor and the chancellor laid out there. The faculty, the overarching purpose of this is to drive economic growth and build your university. And two of the major criteria are faculty hires that generate, produce research dollars, and can support enrollment growth. So those two components largely drive the four university center plans. And it's a source of discussion and different views at the university centers.
Yeah, and the support enrollment growth, frankly, which is an emphasis in our program, is hiring faculty so that we can actually reduce the ratios that are on campus. And I think the objective right now is, at the end of 5 years, we'll be down to under 19. Which 5 years ago, I would have said is not adequate, but since we went to 25 or 6, I guess that is getting adequate, you know. So,
And of course, from the faculty's perspective, the question was, well, if this money's coming back, why not first start by
restoring the
earlier affected? And of course, I'm sure the president can attest, he's still trying to convince people about the difference between capital money, why are we building new dorms, why are
doing that till he retires,
business building, and why aren't we using that money for instructional work? So certainly there's a disconnect, but it's not for lack of continued reiteration of those facts. So.
Yeah, the sad thing is that, and it'll happen to anyone. We happen to be the only ones that made strategic cuts. You know, the others did it across the board. As painful as across-the-board cuts are, they're not programmatic in nature. They're just across the board. We were left out. I mean, frankly, our experience was the reason others didn't do it.
Right.
My colleagues basically said, this is a quote, you know, we love and respect you, but we don't want to be you. That was basically the nature of the conversation. They put the brakes on in terms of what happened here. You know, this was a situation where on our campus we basically, we shot ourselves. I mean, we what happened here is, when I write my book.
Is it your sense, in the long run, we're better.
I mean, is there some appreciation amongst some portion of the faculty that this might have been a wise thing to do, to make strategic cuts, or is it sort of a universally held?
I have heard that off the record in some places.
No, we don't say it out loud.
Right.
It's not completely correct.
And I have heard that from other people, because sometimes people are a little reluctant to say that to me, thinking I will take it personally, being from one of the affected
departments.
She was cut.
Her department was cut.
I remember that.
Right, but in fact, there have been people who have all along said, you know, this, I'm glad it wasn't me, but this made sense given...
Well, Andy, is it not true to say that in the bag recommendations, again, that there was actually a recommendation for even deeper strategic cuts?
Yes, there was.
And that there was a universal concept was that strategic cuts were the way to go.
Right.
Absolutely.
But there's another story once it happens.
And fortunately, for better or for worse, Steve and the provost gave the BAG committees an ability to the cloak of...
Yeah,
we could disengage and say, oh, no, we didn't actually say any of that.
You didn't name departments.
Because we did name departments.
But the strategy was clear.
You were on
that group.
Yes, I was.
And for that reason, it's my fault, because I'm the one who actually said not to do that.
Well,
so.
I mean, that's unfortunately what happens to the president.
Yeah, but I paid for it.
Yeah.
The buck stops with you. What are the two departments that are moving?
The two departments, I believe, are sociology and geography and urban planning. Mm-hmm. They're slated to move downtown.
So that means their offices move downtown. Their instruction stays.
Well, no, actually, their instruction will move downtown. I think that's part of the motivating reason for it. Right?
The master plan that's being developed, incidentally, which has been with great collaboration, and I'll defer to Steve on this, but. The downtown campus, we are going to invest in expanding and rehabilitating the downtown campus, including we're going to be acquiring the Schuyler, the old Albany High School.
We hope to.
We're in the midst of that. Possibility of building another building on one of the sites down there. Some significant rehabilitation for the existing facilities. If you've been down there, I have a personal soft spot for that. I'm sure Pierre does too, because we both were in school there, but and as do you, Kay. But at the end of the day, that's a vital part of the university. The programming is not done. I mean, this is a master plan like instrument that says if we were to do this, this, and this, how would we fill it? How would we accommodate? I mean, there's a lot of room for. Steve is involved with this too. So
I think the master plan is coming to its conclusion, and so if we can possibly accommodate a master plan presentation, perhaps at the next council meeting.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea, because they would find it very interesting.
The idea with it is we agreed on several high principles. One of them is that we're an entire university. The downtown campus isn't a gulag, an outpost where somebody doesn't want to go, but for some graduate schools at night. And so the notion The second principle was to try and kill more than one bird with one stone wherever possible as we invest our capital money downstream. We saw an opportunity to do two things. To build up the downtown campus, or build out the downtown campus, in a way that would make it much more viable and robust by day and by night. It's primarily an evening division right now. And by decanting an extra building on the uptown campus and moving some academic programs down there, be able to finish the uptown podium renovation a full decade sooner than it would otherwise occur, one building at a time. Each building's a 5 or 6 year process, and so, you know, 10 buildings there, 60 years. And so if we empty two buildings, which we can do with this plan, it not only adds greatly to the value and the viability of the downtown campus, it jump starts us up here. So that's the reason for doing it. I think much like in the BAD committee, no one could argue with the principles. It's who's affected, who has a problem with it. There are other options. We can talk about it. It's not a done deal. This is at least 5 or 6 years out that this would occur. But we definitely need to set some things in motion.
And frankly, under the current construct, this campus will not be rehabilitated in any of our lifetime, including Trace. We're talking about a long way to go for him, but we really needed to do something that is going to make a difference in terms of that, and we don't have the ability to construct the kind of swing space that's necessary to do what we do on this campus. So, you know, I know that the faculty often basically view it through a very small prism, but we've got to view it through the bigger picture. We've got to basically maintain the viability of this campus, you know, for a long, long time,
right?
Well after we're gone. So no one will ever be happy with anything or everything. No.
There's a reluctance certainly for anyone to move. The other principle that we're trying to articulate and make folks understand is that everybody's going to have to move at least once as we hopscotch around the podium. No one gets to stay in place because everybody needs to move to new quarters at some point or another. But I've been offering the critics my experience with the history department. Some 15 or so years ago, we moved history over to Timbra, out of social sciences into Timbra. They fought and screamed and threatened not to go. It had to happen. They moved over to Tenbrook. We rehabbed the space about 10 or 15 years later. It was time to bring them back. We refused to come back. We love it here. So we had the exact same argument
back to the new space.
Time when we brought it back. We had to fight twice when we brought it back. So I think we're seeing just that that human nature at work here to some degree.
And I understand there is an additional factor of classroom space that is a part of that.
True.
In terms of being 110.
Our utilization's at 110% on the uptown campus. We're oversubscribed completely, let me leave it at that. 110%, more like 50% downtown,
right?
Because most of the programming is in the evening.
Right.
So one option that we considered in 10,000 hours of discussion during this
at least 10,000
was to move the School of Education downtown. It would fit beautifully. The footprint's about right. Return them to their ancestral home, so to speak. The problem is, most of their programming is in the evening. Yeah. There's no classroom space down there in the evening. What we want to do is move some academic programs down there.
That would
better use the daytime space, because those classrooms lie fallow most of the week during the day. So there's that too, Andy. We're trying to balance the load and accomplish lots of different things with just a few moves.
This campus was designed and built for a capacity of 10,000.
Right.
And we've got 18,000.
Right.
It's a problem. Yeah, it's a problem that, you know, the sociology professor doesn't have to deal with. You know that.
Okay.
Nicholas.
All right. So I'll try to aim somewhere between Andy and Trace.
Sounds like a graduate student.
Yeah. So as a bit of a background, the GSO, we're about a third the size of SA in terms of number of students, but you look at our budget, it's about a magnitude smaller. Our annual budget for everything that we do is about what SA spends for one of their concerts. Trey mentioned before they have about, what, 21 club sports?
Yeah,
we have less than 20 student groups total compared to their 200.
I just remember he used to be SA, and
yep.
the we was in the other shoe at one point.
This is very true. But that said, the graduate student organization, under the great leadership of our president, Heidi Nichols, who's finishing her second term, by the way, and the rest of her team is continuing its mission, educational, cultural, social events. Some highlights include we brought a screening of, it's called the PhD Comics movie. So it was based on this comic strip that's all about being a graduate student. Very funny if you're ever a graduate student. Not terribly funny if you ever were. And they made a movie out of it using Stanford graduate students. We had a Mardi Gras casino night down at Jillian's. We had a trip to the Turkish American Scientists and Scholars Association conference and plenty of other stuff. We continue to allocate funds to our small number of student groups. We have grants to graduate students for travel and research. We do community outreach and so on. Plan to hold our elections next month. We'll also be having some constitutional amendments and proposals. One of the things that we're going to try is to use the internet to have people give feedback on the proposed changes instead of doing it in these committee meetings. I'll let you know in May how that goes. And other than that, we're just trying to keep our heads down, teach classes, work in the offices, and do our research in labs.
Thank you very much.
We've also worked very extensively. Heidi and Zafir have worked very extensively on a lot of our community engagement initiatives, like a lot of stuff we have done. We have had full support from the GSO on many things.
So Heidi and Zafir actually attended the chamber dinner last night.
Yes, they did.
And they actually looked really good dressed up. Zafir actually looked good in a tux. Yeah. I told him he was there.
Well, there's a picture on the time union.
Black tie.
Both of them. There's a picture on the time union. So
I didn't get
that.
Yeah.
I think so.
It's enough for me to never.
I think so.
Yeah,
it's definitely on the website, too.
Okay. Heidi and Zafir are both on the search committee, so they're integrated up and down. Thank you, Nicholas. Okay.
Thank you. First of all, our board and nominations want to thank all of you. We were overwhelmed by your response to my request for board nominations. I don't want to say it's the first time that we nominated, but it was very, very impressive, and we really want to thank you. Okay, let me update you on how we're putting in action a couple of our strategic plans. First, a shameless ad. Pass around. One of the first of our initiatives, helping students find positions in their field of interest. And you see the top question on this ad is, can you give, most people stop there because they're asking for money, 15 minutes to a UAlbany student? And the answer is you can. What is you can? That is introducing the University Albany Career Advisory Network. And basically what we're recruiting is for alums to volunteer to create a profile and just spend a few moments, they control the whole interaction and so forth, to share their professional experiences, maybe some internships, but it overall inspire and encourage alums, as young alums as well as recent graduates. To that end, here's our goals. We're in the process of recruiting about 1,200 alums. Then in the fall, we're going to make this widely known. We have a number of strategies through sophomores through grad students. And in fact, this ad that you see here will be in the UAlbany magazine this month. Okay, our second one I wanted to just talk about, we have three action items on that, is helping to attract more of the best students. We know we have the best students, we just want to attract more. So the first thing that we're doing as an alum association
is
we're...
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
You talked about the UAlbany magazine. Is there a reason why that people don't get that?
I'll defer, because that's not
explain that. We actually... Because of the budget cuts, we eliminated the university magazine.
So you have to go online.
No, we didn't eliminate the magazine per se. The hard copy.
Right.
The hard copy.
Right. That's right.
You get the email though, I think probably.
I was coming back. But we are bringing it back. We have some salary savings that we are doing this one-time edition, and we are only going to send it to limited. Though we are no longer.
No, I was just curious because I haven't seen it in ages.
Yeah.
Sorry. Didn't mean.
No, that's a good question. But we will have one coming out in the spring, right? A hard copy?
March 21st is the day.
Exactly, which this will be in then. Sales.
Sorry.
Okay, our second initiative that I want to just highlight is helping to attract more of the best students. And under that guise, one thing we're doing is we're sponsoring and coordinating with staff actually appearing at 10 accepted student receptions. And of those 10, in order to help the admissions with their out-of-state recruitment, we're actually sponsoring six, one in New Jersey, two in New Jersey, one in New Hampshire, one in Mass, two in Connecticut, and then, of course, the traditional Westchester, Long Island, Rochester, and so forth. In addition, we're recruiting Alumni Association members to attend college fairs, help with some of the actual recruitment, open houses, and so on. So that's our three initiatives in hoping to attract more of the best students. In the area of engaging alumni, supporting institutional and academic priorities, and enhancing philanthropy, we have a whole range of strategies. But I thought I would just mention, to illustrate what we're doing, some things in March and April. We just finished on March 6th a career marketing panel at the Alumni House, which was highly successful. On March 20th, we're going to have and I got to be careful how I say this, Grad Fest. I had said Gab Fest when I did this the last time. We do that in the church. Grad Fest is on here. We're working with the grad students and Nicholas's group and so forth, where we'll be welcoming the class of 2012. March 21st, I'm going to let Pardeen, I'm sure, will refer to this, but we have an event, fashion event, in Saks Fifth Avenue. On April 4th, we're doing a pre-law panel on career planning and so forth here again at the Alumni House. On the 14th, we're doing the Spring Stomp at the lacrosse event, the John Fallon Field. The 28th, we have our Alumni Volunteer Recognition Luncheon Hall of Fame room. And then on April 28th, which we're very excited about, is our Excellence Awards Gala, a very formal event held at in the downtown hotel and so on. Widely attended. In fact, it usually closes out. We're thrilled about that. And then lastly, again, Fardeen, I'm sure we've heard of this, but we're participating in the Judaic Studies lecture at the Museum of Heritage. And I have to say, you've heard me say this over and over again, but I really need to stress it. We couldn't do any of this without Fardeen and his shop. They're always there for us. As I like to say, his help doth floweth at all times. Thank you all.
Okay. Thank you.
Is this a young Fardeen? Is this a photo of a young Fardeen?
I wish.
Out of his GQ page, right?
This kind of looks like a young
Fardeen. See what you see there? He was four, he looked like that.
Okay, Mr. McElroy, I believe you're up next.
Please, you said just start with the mouse, and it should plug it in. Nick, am I right?
Yeah.
Good luck, please.
I think start with me. I would suggest
start with Nick.
If Nick's has got it, then we're in good shape.
Oh, all right.
You just click the mouse. I'll click it.
Okay, good. We're going to go through Athletics 101 in about 10 minutes, but before I get into it, I want to just make some quick announcements. George, if he didn't mention it, I think it's worth bearing again.
The
NCAA recertification process was successful, and basically what that means is that our entire program underwent a self-study by the campus, chaired by Provost Phillips, and three chairs from the campus, not the athletic program. And they look at three areas. They look at academic integrity, they look at student-athlete well-being and equity, and rules compliance, which if you're reading the paper today and you're a Syracuse grad or a Connecticut grad or a Boston University grad, you would think there is no rules compliance. But so that was very well done. We're fully certified, which basically means we meet all regulations and elements of the NCAA and the campus and the institution. So that's important.
Good for 10 years, too, guys. So, you don't worry
about it. So George really liked that part.
I like the part that it's...
My second announcement is that we play a championship game tomorrow for our women in our arena in the America East Championship. In 2 years, my coach of the year, Coach A, has taken our team, which never had a winning season in 11 years of Division I, to produce two winning seasons. Wow. Championship team, and in today's Times Union, there was an article on Julie Foster, who's in our School of Business. I've had three professors say to me, on the record, she may be the smartest student in the business school that they've seen since they've been teaching there. So, 397, she's the real deal. We have another young lady. Julie was not on scholarship. That's what's so great about this article, and what's so great about my business is that you not only can develop opportunities, you can create opportunities. So she came in as a walk-on, great student, great kid. Now she's full scholarship kid and doing well. We have another young lady, Ebony Henry, who is from San Diego, California. And I might add, and to give the coach, my former coach, kudos, both of these student athletes were recruited by Trina Patterson. So we don't want to leave her out. She did a great job of bringing young women to our campus. But Ebony is from San Diego. She's a junior. When she first came in, she wouldn't even look at you. And George knows this story. When Coach Abe came in, she made all of our young women say, when you're talking to alumni, friends, president, whomever, you look them in the eye, you shake their hand, you tell them what you do and how they may be able to help you. So Ebony is like a totally transformed young lady, and it's just really nice to see. Engagement of our student athletes, if you don't know, and we'll talk about it very briefly, we donate 2,500 hours of community service to the Capital Region. We're involved with McDonald's office. We're involved with the American Cancer Association. We're involved with the American Heart Association, on and on and on. There have been five organizations selected for their work in the community by the Northeast Parent and Child Organization. We're one of them. We're going to be recognized nationally. Not me, not a coach, not an administrator, but our entire 500 student athletes for the work that they do are going to be acknowledged there. So with that said, you get a quick sense of what we're doing and how we're going about it. Nick, just take us through this very quickly. Keep moving. this is something we went over with you last year, and when P and I talked about this, I think it's very important that people know what we do and what we live by, because the students are going to change every year. A lot of times, as I mentioned, the coaches change. A lot of things change with regard to athletics and regulations, but there are certain values and things that guide you, and we try to live by those things. Hit it again, big man. Again, we talked about respect and communication and making sure that our athletes not only compete in the classroom, compete on the field, but when they leave here, as Kay just said, they're able to be successful in the community and to serve as leaders, and they've all done that. Keep going, Matt, big thoughts. Again, the values stand out. They're in your organizations. They're what you do. And again, the people that reflect them have to do it on a consistent basis. All right, then. We've got 19 programs. We've got more women's programs than guys. We have actually more women athletes. We've got 260 female athletes, 240 men. As you will see, they all compete very well, and they all have a chance to compete for conference titles. Next. The people that you affiliate with, and Andy and Dan and Patricia and I heard this today about quality of the institution and values and what it means and why we shouldn't be at the top, or why we're tier three and why we aren't tier two or tier one. But as you go down those universities, Boston is a top 75 university, UMBC and Vermont are top 100 universities, and Stony Brook is an AAU. And believe it or not, even as jocks, we talk about what goes on other than athletics. And so the people you are affiliated with, New Hampshire is also a very fine academic institution. It's more than just trying to beat them up for 40 minutes, as we're going to try to do tomorrow on the court. There are other assets, there are other elements of the university that are very important. Next. Our football, George talked about our facility. I'll give you a handout at the end about that. But Bob Ford has been extremely patient, 42 years. I mean, he's a guy that is unbelievable in terms of his patience and his ability to improve the quality of life for young students.
Let me just go back. The first meeting to talk about building a football facility was in 1973. 1973.
And George has been with us 5 years now as our leader.
Yep.
We started talking about this 3 years before he came, as Vince will remember. I still have the paperwork from it, and now it's come to fruition. And my friend Steve and his area, and Gina Russo and George and everybody, it was really a team effort. But Northeast Conference is where we play there, and our women's golf team is in the Metro Atlantic with that ugly team across town. I won't name. Next. Keep going.
Video?
Yeah, it should, just a brief one. I think it really captures everything we do.
With the lights out?
Yeah.
That's the bottom there.
The bottom button.
Yeah. The bottom button on there. bottom button here?
It's very brief.
No?
Yep.
Yeah, go down.
Actually, that number is 53 now, folks, not
nice.
49. Our volleyball team, one of the best in the country. We talk about football. We know what they've done. That's our championship team in 2007. We're not representing John Fallon Field right now, but John, we're getting better.
That you have commitment, excellence, dedication, and the ability to move forward and attain the highest goal in every endeavor.
It takes competitiveness, desire, and hard work.
Field hockey is perennially ranked nationally in the country in the top 15,
wow,
as is volleyball. George has already talked about track and field. They're fantastic and fantastic kid. By far our most diverse program.
Men's track and field, 7 consecutive years of America East Championships.
Is that right?
Last year we were ranked number 5 in the country in women's lacrosse.
Hard work and an attitude where you do nothing less but want to win.
Hard work, dedication, and commitment.
The key to success is being committed on and off the field.
Young lady was an academic and an athletic all-American, Nikki Brancini. She's now a grad student at the university. Andrew Smith chairs my student athlete advisory committee and is one of my most outstanding leaders.
He's local, right?
Yes, he's from Gilliland.
Drew's from Gilliland, but what a terrific football player he is. Yeah, he's terrific. Well, Nikki's also local.
Yes, yeah, Gilderland
as well. Yeah.
Wait, who's the coach of the track and field?
Nikki was
Roberto Vives.
Has he been with us all those years?
He's been with us. We had Arl Muncy was with us 27 years, George.
Keith Muncy, yeah. But we've only, in the history of this university, only had 2 track and field coaches. Muncy created the program.
And over 50 years, yeah. And they both have been equally as successful. Just as an aside, Kay, speaking of alumni, 2 years ago, was it 2 years?
2 years ago.
Yeah, we inducted Coach Munson to the Hall of Fame. We had double the size and attendance that we've ever had.
We had to actually move the staff out into the hallway because we had no seating.
When did you do that?
2 years ago.
Yeah. Muncy was in
there? Yes, yeah. Wow. Fascinating man.
He was quite a character.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
That's Nick.
His comment was, I had no idea that snot-nosed Greek I recruited was going to be president. That was me.
Oh, you were a track star?
I wasn't a star of anything.
This is important, folks, and this is what George loves about our program. Our graduation rate, and that's the federal rate, is 69. We have a GSR. It's called a graduating success rate. It's 82%. And it's a little slightly different metric that's measured in taking away people that transfer, so that's why it's higher. And our GPA is 2.0. The other thing that's not up there...
3.0.
But the other thing that's not up there is our students are in the same majors as the general student population. So students that are in business, students that are in communication, those are 2 our more popular areas. And in the College of Arts and Sciences, our student athletes reflect the general student population. So what you want to have, next Nick, is your student athletes looking like the rest of your campus. I talked about the service. There it is, loud and clear down next to it. We're going to move quickly. Keep going. Okay. This is, you know, always comes up. It'll be coming up more now with March Madness coming up. But if you look at Stony Brook and you look at Bloomington and you look at Buffalo, they obviously, well, certainly not Bloomington, they don't have football. Buffalo is not in our conference. But you see what they spend. You see what we spend. And those of you that were at the football game against Stony Brook in NCAA playoffs, you know that we had a packed house. I would say, Pierre, half and half, maybe, between purple and red. And you see, they spend a lot more money than we do. And I think we're better. Well, I know we're much better. This has changed a little bit now in that the amount of investment by the state of New York in capital projects, which George mentioned earlier, that $6 million will now be $30 million because we've got $24 million if you also include the $6 million that Fardeen's raising. So a very limited investment. You see what Bloomington is, the state's invested in their athletic facilities. Stony Brook, Senator LaValle has helped him very well in Buffalo. So there's a big disparity in terms of state investment in capital projects for athletic facilities for us.
Yes. Actually, when you showed the budgets, is that our entire athletic budget? Is that much less than those other universities? Or
yes.
Do we have another form of revenue source that you're not counting?
That's all in, that's an all-in budget. And frankly, the only one that's there that's lower is Binghamton, but no football.
Yeah, no football, right.
Right.
So it makes a huge difference.
Right.
How do we do it?
We, you know, Joe,
they do it kicking and screaming and crying.
Well, and when you have a Bob Ford who's been with you for 42 years and a Roberto Vives has been with you for 28 years and on, if you look at Stanford, and this is a bad name now, but it wasn't a few years ago, and Penn State, and some of our top athletic programs in the country that have good academic reputations, mm-hmm. see a lot of inconsistency and stability in the staff and the administration, the number of people that have been there. So that's part of the reason that, you know, they bought in. They keep on being
great. The small blue bar, is that NCAA appearances?
Yeah, what is that?
No, the NCAA.
NCAA is your postseason. Yeah.
The second one is league championships.
Yes.
And then the third one is postseason. If you'll notice that we have more league championships, more postseason appearances than any of the others who spend a whole lot more money.
Right. We don't have. Yeah, we can kind of skip this because what we've done, as George said, is really address the capital piece, and we've done it with a phase two, and it, you know. Maybe the governor will begin to be very kind to us. And I won't put a year on when that would come about, but if we were to add on to the stadium, the infrastructure, as George indicated, is already there. So we're not wasting any money in this capital project and moving forward. That's the stadium as it's going to look in about, Steve, what, 14 months? And very much needed, and people are already calling us. Fardeen is... raised a lot of money. We went to lunch early in the week, and the lunch was supposed to last an hour. It lasted 3 hours because two very prominent business people were saying this is going to do more than just have activity. It's going to have a lot of things.
That's because we were negotiating.
Well, you were doing
like each other's company.
Nick, nice.
Fardeen was actually negotiating the check at the restaurant. That's it, including that's his heritage. He has to.
Okay, stop there, because this is the thing that, and this will not be ready until the spring of 14, and that's 14. Our track and field facility, which will be where the existing track and field location is. And as George said, we've never had a regulation NCAA track and field facility, and so we've not been able to host a competition, and we have one of the top 20 track and field men and women programs in the nation. So thanks to George and Steve and the state of New York. In 14, we're going to have a heck of a time coming up with the N14 as well with the home meet. So we can end it there. I do want to give you one other item, and that is source that some of you were not familiar with what all the elements of the stadium were and what's entailed. And what I'm passing around is just information on each of the three venues, the size of the venue, what we hope to accomplish by them, and who was responsible for putting this through. George came up with a very creative financial model. I'm not going to go into it because it's outlined in there and the principles that were involved. Yeah, oh yeah, we have more.
Okay. We've got some coming.
Okay. And so it just outlines and describes all those things. And I will close by saying this. Last week in the New York Times, there was an article on Binghamton, and all the people that they spoke of are no longer there. Today's New York Times has an article on Boston University and their hockey program. And basically, essentially, what both of them say, and you can surmise and conclude from those articles, are that if you're not in concert with the rest of your university, your athletic program, and everything that you do, and Syracuse is going through that as well, you're going to have problems. I can assure you that your athletic program fits very closely with the values that we've learned from our graduate and undergraduate representatives of the students. So I'm going to stop there and entertain any questions or comments.
Well done.
Well said.
Yeah.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. Congratulate those students who come to the game. Man.
And if you're in town tomorrow night,
yes, sir.
7 o'clock?
8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
It's on TV. ESPN is going to run it, and also Time Warner.
Who was the timekeeper in that Stony Brook game, by the way?
Oh, boy. We are negotiating as we speak, and I'm going to get a call, hopefully.
That was a robbery.
In another hour from insider.com, which is obviously not the NCAA, but it's a postseason game that will take teams that don't make the NCAA.
Right.
So I'm hoping that our kids, if we are able to make this work, will be in that game. I've never seen a more disappointed group of young men. We were down there. It was unbelievable, and it was in our business. You'll see on the backboard, you'll see an image, if you will, right. A light, and then you have a sound. And right. In the real world, they're supposed to be synced up.
So right, and they weren't.
Sound? No, they were not.
You could
the
tell
sound
on TV
came
even.
Off, and then you saw the.
Actually lost on a tip in after the game was over.
Well, right, that's what I'm saying.
After the game was over, we lost on a tip in.
Yeah, because the announcer said they didn't get it off in time.
Oh,
all
absolutely.
Of a sudden,
yeah. So it was not in sync, and it's a moot point now. But our young people handled it well. Coach Brown handled it well. No one, had any sportsmanship.
Right.
They all held their heads up. They walked away, but they were extreme.
Fortunately, I didn't go because I would have been the worst sport up there.
George,
I would have been thrown out.
You don't know this. George doesn't like officials.
I was watching it while we were eating dinner, and I was screaming at the little computer.
It was what an awful way to determine the outcome of the game.
Yeah, I was there.
Did you see it? I didn't see it. That was like Brown.
Well, where we were, with all the Albany group, we couldn't see it.
Yeah.
I had to go. That's why I left to go check the monitor.
TV, it was.
And it was the right call. Yeah.
Well, it was the right call based on the light going off, but it was the wrong call. If you look at the clock had expired.
So it wasn't in sync.
Anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to mess it up.
Next up, and hopefully we've had a chance to look at what. Been circulated, but is adoption of council bylaws.
Actually, more of a suggestion that we consider the adoption and take a look at them.
No, absolutely. We don't have a resolution today.
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
I think there's a couple of things have been happening that I'm aware of as serving as the president of ACT. Yes, there's very active college councils at Canton and Potsdam and Morrisville and SUNY IT and some of the shared services stuff. We saw last year that Stony Brook had to adopt a resolution after the fact on the transfer of some facilities, et cetera, at the Southampton campus.
Campsite.
I think that we're seeing that. There are constituencies that are looking at college councils and saying that, yes, college councils have the statutory responsibility, duties, powers to look at major projects, whatever that is, of student activities, of buildings and grounds, of student conduct, and making sure that the college councils are really fulfilling that role and that responsibility in addition to other stuff. Now, that's on kind of the statewide ACT. Stony Brook has bylaws, which I shared. Cobeskill is more specific as to what they have following the law, that they will get a budget briefing prior to basically what it says in statute. I know that Fredonia is working on their bylaws, as are Potsdam, and probably more. So I thought that it may be a good opportunity to have either the entire council or a special group take a look at various bylaws, look at them to see if there's some continuity, if there's some interest that this council may have in adopting bylaws, putting them out on the website, et cetera. I know that we got a notice from on open meetings law and the requirements there and other things that may very well want to be included in the bylaws. I think it addresses some of the concerns that other council members have brought up as to, what are we doing? How can we contribute? What can we do? Is there a standing committee that we ought to have? Is there special committees that we ought to have? So I merely offer that up and for comment, suggestions, and whatever the council feels.
Yeah, I personally thought from a sort of governance is important, and best practices would really tell you you should have bylaws. I enjoyed, you know, I perused them. I can't say I did the deep dive, but I went through it, and I saw a lot in there that makes sense. And certainly having the framework for how you're governed and people clearly understanding, you know, how that transpires and what the bylaws and how it's codified, I thought it made sense to me, you know. And from my standpoint, probably having a subcommittee or some smaller group work on the bylaws or a proposed draft to consider and share with the broader council made a lot of sense.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same place. I agree.
So, Pierre, I think you're the committee head.
Guess what?
Well, I'd be happy to add to the committee.
Well, I think I heard Avner volunteer a few emails back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why don't I start by gathering the number of bylaws that are out there
from other
campuses. We'll kind of share those. We'll put the same boilerplate information that's on most of them, and then we'll have points to discuss.
I mean, obviously, there's a handbook, there's a statute, there's a lot of things out there, but I think it would be really helpful to have council-specific bylaws as the first place that people can look to understand procedures by which we live and go.
Finally we'll know what we're doing.
We're supposed to be doing it anyway.
My hope was to get out of here before you know what you're doing.
Too late.
Yeah, that's very fun. Fardeen gets extolled every meeting. Once again, you're up next, Fardeen.
Oh, thank you. I want to start with an announcement that the University at Albany Foundation established the George and Sandra Phillip Presidential Scholarship Fund.
All right.
And the foundation board members started a fund of $100,000, matching funds for every donation that comes in up to $100,000. And the first $50,000 was donated by our very good friend, Mr. Morris Masary. Mm-hmm. Our hope is to raise somewhere close to $500,000. So, George, either I get the, or you can't leave until I get the money.
He's going to use me till the last
second. Every ounce out of that, too.
It was interesting that when we were speaking to one of our athletic friends on the Tuesday. He indicated, yeah, I love athletics, but I love George too. So it's going to be gifts coming in both directions. Also, our Citizen Laureate event this year, our Citizen Laureates are Norman and Mickey Masary, and our Academic Laureate is Catherine Ballara Larson. And John Nigro, who is a Citizen Laureate from 2 years ago, is going to be chairing the event. And I am guaranteed this is going to be our most successful Citizen Laureate. Mm-hmm. The high water mark was 2 years ago, 178,000. This year our goal is 200,000. And I already told John Nigro, whatever I'm short, I will send him a check. We are going to be hosting a breakfast. It's called President's Breakfast, that we invite our local business supporters at certain levels and up, and we do it just usually in the fall, but because of the great speaker that we were able to secure, we are going to do another one May 3rd, and the speaker is going to be Craig Hatkoff. He's the co-founder of Tribeca Film Festival, and he's a local product. He's from Capital Region area, and also this year, we are going to be, the breakfast is from 8 to 9, from 10 to 11 is going to be open to the public at the Performing Arts Center. We are going to be inviting the public for his talk, and there's going to be panel discussion too. The person who's spearheading this is Mary Valentis, and she's one of our faculty members. She's just wonderful. And speaking of magazine, we are bringing the magazine print edition back. As you know, we had the iPad version of it, electronic version of it last year. And we cut it. I tried to massage it and tell everybody for we were going green. No, we were just trying to save green that we didn't have. So I had to expose that quickly. And so this edition is going to be featuring, believe it or not, our alumni in fashion. We discovered that we have quite a few alumni who are very successful in the fashion industry, from being agents to the top models, or to being just at Goldman, at Saks Fifth Avenue and at executive level. And they are also at Saks Fifth Avenue. The Alumni Association is co-hosting with Saks Avenue, Fifth Avenue, an event on March 21st.
And you're all invited.
It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, it really is very smart.
And we're getting a great response. As I said, magazine is going to be featuring our alumni in fashion. And also, Kate mentioned April 29th. I invite all of you to New York City, apart from April 28th here for the Alumni Awards. April 29th is the our final event for the series of programming that we did with the Jacob Studies. And this is going to be at the Museum of Jewish Heritage in Battery Park. And our speaker is one of the best speakers in the nation about this object, and you will all be receiving invitation on that too. That is my report, and we have secured since last meeting 4 six-figure gifts, and I'm hoping to report a lot more six-figure gifts by the next meeting towards the stadium project. Thank you.
Excellent.
I think it was in October that you had mentioned that there was a naming that we did kind of quietly, and is that
the $1 million?
Yes.
Yes, I mean that's
for the PE building.
Yes, that was the anonymous donor, which I talked him into him not to be anonymous to that many people, because his name really lends credibility to my.
Turn off the tape and.
Well, His name will lend credibility to my fundraising efforts. I say, it's not every day that we will get $1 million gift. Okay. He actually came with Leah and I to our solicitation call. He was actually.
Is this to name the PE building or the stadium?
Stadium. No. Just the PE building.
PE building, not the stadium.
Not the stadium. At the time when he's ready to release his name for the public, we will
mention his name.
So. That's my report.
Thank you very much, Bernie. Wonderful work.
Thank you.
Very creative, too. Next up, presidential search. Pat, can you cover
Dan?
That? No, there's nothing coming.
No. I mean, I think we're doing our best, George, to help you out the door.
You're just about $400 short.
What's it worth to you?
This kills my ego. My ego goes down the toilet.
You can go.
Fill in that gap and you're out of here.
Those of us who have another agenda to play as much as possible.
We're very early on in the search. The search committee has had one official meeting. We, as this group knows, we have hired the search consultant, Isaacson Miller, and their representative is a guy named Michael Baer. He has already spent 2 days on campus. He spoke to this group. I think he's spoken to every group there that exists that might have an interest in the search. Today, we also held the first of two listening sessions that actually turned into Q&A sessions. The second one, lots of Q. Yes, exactly. There will be a second one a week from Tuesday that'll be at the downtown campus. I regret I will not be attending that one.
I think Pierre and Dr. Jackson will be.
Yes, Pierre and Jim Jackson are going to be hosting that one. But it's early on. I mean, we're still writing the working on the draft position profile or the job description, which is the purpose of all of this. And once done, then at that point is when they'll go out with advertising and really seeking candidates. So I'm going to guess probably 3 weeks away. It's probably about the end of the month is when that profile will be done. And that's when the interesting stuff will probably begin.
I mean, are they still targeting trying to have someone here next academic year?
Oh, look at him.
Yeah, I think that would be everyone's objective, to have someone here for the start of the next academic year. Some people have the objective of having this done by the end of this academic year.
By the end of this
academic year. But I don't know that we'll make that target. I mean, we'll
some
just
people
wait
are
see.
Quite anxious.
New president has
Reed
to
Sandra.
I'm short for the stocks.
I mean,
right.
The only thing I would add to that is, you know, that the committee got a charge from the chancellor. She's very focused, once she's very laudatory of the work, as we all are, that George has done, and has put us
absolutely
in a marvelous position to now go out and recruit the next president. Again, can't start any conversation about the next president without starting with our current president, which is really true. But very focused on being an advocate for the search, being helpful. Talking about environmentally, I think we're in a different spot. And, you know, we've talked about this before. We have a chancellor now. We have a governor who's focused with the Synergy 2020 plan. You know, George has really positioned the university very well for the next president. So I think there's a lot there to build on, to your point, Michael, about schedule. I mean, I think as a practical matter, it's not going to certainly be done by the end of the school year, which really is May. But, you know, it should go, hopefully, in line and in pace with to be in a position with somebody who can make a commitment to coming next year. Whether that's a commitment to be here, you know, as the school starts or slightly later, we'll see. But I think that's where all the focus is. And as everybody knows, you're as good, your presence is as good as who you attract into that candidate pool. It's
absolutely
all about who you interview. So that's where the focus is. And I think that's it.
The line about walk on water, I think, in order to carry on in the tradition is going to be a little tricky to fill.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful.
And then making water into wine, which is
right.
Great.
Yeah. Exactly. For all meetings, right? That'll make them a little bit more smooth.
That usually doesn't end well. I should do that.
Yeah. Oh. Would you like to speak to that?
I could walk on water, but I gained 30 pounds, so it's just
floating and walking are
better. I think holding your water
is a warm winter. I can walk on winter. I can walk on water.
A warm
winter too.
Any other business people would like to raise? Otherwise, I'd like a motion to adjourn.
Yeah.
So be it. For that.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, Swirl.
The open meeting.
The
thing.
Open meeting thing.
Oh. Before we adjourn. No. It came out. Remember, I sent.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Just I wanted to report that the SUNY trustees adopted this. It actually came through the assembly, I guess. But open
statute.
Meeting laws statute, and it will affect us. You want to add something?
We need an agenda out ahead of time. So
okay, so whatever comes up in advance of a meeting will appear on our website. Take a look at it, the open law. So it gives everyone in the community an opportunity to look in advance of a meeting of what we're, if we have a document, of what that document includes.
Yeah, Monday is the beginning of Sunshine Week. What's it called? Sunshine Week, so expect to see a lot of other stuff about at the legislature. Sunshine.
Transparency.
That'll go into the bylaws.
I was like, what are they talking about?
Okay, meeting adjourned.
Thanks.